Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And we are still here. This is, we're doing two shows today because you're off next week.
Yep.
And I need a little recoup time. I need a little downtime. Let the body fix itself still. So, yeah.
You know, the only thing that I can imagine is you doing like a Max Payne thing and just taking up pills just as you're walking throughout the day, and you got pills at your desk, and you know it's like the power-ups.
Yeah.
You know, as you're just getting through the week and getting through the weekend, that's all I imagine.
You got the wrong niner, buddy. I've taken two aspirins from this since it happened, so I wish I could.
Well, the way that you pound back the five-hour energy drinks, man.
Yeah, I do have to do something to get started, so it's a caffeine cocktail in the morning. All right, first question here. Is it possible to have Windows and number hotkeys, so it's like Win1, Win2, Win3, not to minimize running or and focused windows? I have several monitors and use taskbar auto-hide feature together with full-screen applications, so I don't know which window currently has focus. Pressing Windows and a number, currently focus window number, makes the window minimize and is really annoying.
Unfortunately, we have no setting for that.
Yeah.
You
want to show the feature here that they're talking about, just in case someone's very confused?
You know, oddly enough, I wish I could, except this little keyboard.
Your on-screen thing. Keyboard.
On-screen keyboard with the Win key and a number?
Yeah. Try it. I've done it. I'm sure I've done it.
Yeah, except there is no Win key on this keyboard.
Do the thing.
Do that one. That.
Yeah, Windows key, and then one. And then Windows key and one again. Or Windows key and the same number again.
Yeah.
It's not doing it.
No, it was Windows key 1.
Should so minimize it.
Yeah, it'll maximize
like
and
minimize. It would.
It'll maximize and minimize the window. Unfortunately, it's a toggle key.
Yeah.
Right? So it just says whatever the previous state was, reverse it.
Yeah, and there's no way to change it so it doesn't minimize. So.
Right.
And it sounds like the user just wants to bring it to focus.
Right.
All right. Sorry. Next question. My Western Digital MyBook Essential external hard drive crashed recently, and I'm trying to recover the data from it. Thinking that the hard drive enclosure is simply a USB SATA converter, I tried connecting the internal hard drive directly to my PC through a SATA port. However, this didn't work, and the Windows Disk Management tool only recognized the drive as unallocated space. I'm concerned that my action could have allowed Windows to modify my hard drive in an unrecoverable way, like a low-level operation to MBR.
So, first thing, by simply connecting the drive, you didn't do any irrevocable harm.
Yeah.
In fact, the fact that it's noticed it as an unformatted file system basically tells Windows, don't touch this thing at all.
It's like putting a camera in Schrodinger's cat's box.
Sure.
Ponder on that one.
Yeah, that'll make me think for a little while.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you don't have to worry about that, but I've actually taken apart one of these Western Digital Passport drives before,
yep.
And they aren't just regular USB to SATA converters. They actually run a micro OS on there.
Yeah.
That will handle the backups, and it exposes an interface that will show up as an external hard drive to the machine, but it actually has some extra smarts behind it.
Yeah.
So you can't simply just swap them in and out. Depending on what's actually wrong with the drive, you might have to have a professional recovery on it.
Mm-hmm.
It may be running a version of Linux.
Yeah.
So you might want to try booting it with a live CD version of Linux and see if it can load it up with any of the file system partitions that Linux uses.
Yeah, and we talked about a couple of disk recovery applications on the last show. Would either of those help?
Probably.
What was the one that you mentioned last week?
So the RTools Undelete.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will handle any of the Linux stuff. I've not used it for any of the Linux stuff. And all I know that it handles FAT and NTFS.
Yeah.
But there are numerous Linux utilities out there for recovery of files,
mm-hmm.
Especially on their file systems.
Yeah.
But I don't think that the Western Digital uses an NTFS file system.
Yeah, I have some Western Digital MyBook drives at home.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that I have that I would really like to play around with have two disks in them.
Yeah, so they're rated.
Yeah, so I know there's some smarts going on in there, whether they're, I don't know what they're doing, whether they're striping them or it's, you know, I guess it's how you set it up. But what I'd really like to do is pull
Are they removable in general, or are they like one case?
Removable, that is not... like removing a battery in a modern smartphone.
Okay, yeah, so not really like user accessible.
No, it's like try to figure this out for 20 minutes, scratch up the case horribly with a screwdriver,
and that's how.
And then
eBay.
You figure out, oh, it easily slides open this way. Yeah, right. So that kind of thing. But what I'd like to do is they're really old, so the old hard drives are small. I'd like to replace it with two terabyte drives and make it a bigger drive, but I don't know if you can upgrade my books.
The real problem with that is the BIOS, whatever it is that it's using, may have locked it to a particular sizes.
Yeah.
It may not be able to handle 2 terabytes. I know a lot of those systems maxed out at 1.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they've got in there right now. Are they 500s?
I don't know. I'd have to look. I think 200s or something. They're that old.
Wow, that's really old.
Yeah.
Your best bet might be at 1 terabyte drives.
In fact, now it might be 500s. I think it's a 1 terabyte with 2 drives in it.
So you might get lucky and be able to put in 2 1-terabyte drives, but
yeah.
I would not suspect that you'd get 2 terabyte each out of each drive in that one.
Okay, good. All right, next question. If 4 friends in 4 different locations wanted to share files stored on each of their computers, what should they use and set that up? So we were talking about this earlier. SkyDrive would be your choice, and you have that on your home machine, right?
Yeah, I use SkyDrive with the SkyDrive desktop client in order to access just files. So that's all they are, is just accessing files off of machines.
So normally when people think of SkyDrive, they're thinking about cloud storage.
Right.
I've moved my files up to the cloud. But
right.
you're pulling these off your home machine.
Right.
And obviously your home machine has to be on.
Exactly.
But it's not copying those files up to the cloud. You're
Correct.
Just pulling them right from your machine.
Exactly.
Cool. And you use the SkyDrive client for that?
I use the SkyDrive client for that. And you can go to the SkyDrive tips and tricks to do that.
Cool. And you've got an article there that I'll link to in the show notes as well.
Yep. And then you use Hamachi.
I haven't done this in a lot of years, but in the past I use Hamachi to share files with family members.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes like a VPN that you can copy stuff back and forth with people.
But this is significantly different. Like, this goes well beyond just sharing of the files.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like it's almost, if I remember right, and it's been a long time, it was like an instant messenger that also does a VPN and shares files with others. And
oh yeah, it does more now. It's like you're talking about software deployment, software management, machine management. You know, this is the kind of thing that maybe you'd want to do with setting up friends' machines, and then you need to troubleshoot their systems. You use this, and you get access to their system.
Yeah, the other thing that got me using Hamachi was I was trying to play a really old game that would only play multiplayer over a LAN,
mm-hmm.
and so we use this to make a private LAN over a large distance, and
right.
then to play the game like you're sitting on a local network.
Yeah, I've actually done that before. My home router has VPN. Capabilities,
mm-hmm.
and you can have up to, I believe, 10 users simultaneously.
Nice.
And connect up to that VPN, separate out the users, and it'll be as if you're like 10 people on your local LAN. And as you say, play a LAN game like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it actually works out pretty decently.
Very cool. Nice. Awesome.
I use that when I travel.
The other one that we were talking about is private BitTorrent.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go really distributed, if you're having to share multiple files across, any number of users, right, and you don't want to have to set up individual username logins, you can always do a private BitTorrent tracker to share your files.
Okay.
Nothing really wrong with it.
Yeah, all right. Next question. I have a third-party library that's making a temp file somewhere. I need to find where because I have to give that folder the correct security properties. Now I can run this library only as administrator due to this trouble. How can I monitor the file system to find which files are touched or created?
So we've talked about it. Andrew's talked about it. We all love Process Monitor. It's actually relatively simple. If you know the process name that it's running under,
mm-hmm.
you just go to this filter icon. Process name is... clearly added the wrong one, but anyways, add your process name to that, hit add, and then just turn off the registry, network, process information, and just leave file system information on there.
Yeah.
and run your process and just wait for the file that you're looking for to be written. If you know the actual file name that you're waiting for, you can also use that as part of your filter. Mm-hmm. If you choose the image path, process monitor is not necessarily great for touch.
Yeah.
If you choose the image path, you can type in the file name that you're looking for and it'll completely filter down to that. Or if you want to just see more things, all of the files that are being written, you can also choose the highlight again with the path key to the file that you're looking for. And then you can, out of the sea of files that are being written, that it'll highlight that particular one.
Cool. Okay. All right, next question. I want to delete some built-in drivers from Windows 7 or WinVista ISO file. Is it possible? Where is the driver location, the ISO file, please? And how can we recognize that type, the type of that, for example, chipset, sound card, graphics, etc.?
My biggest question to that is why would you want to remove a built-in driver from Windows? I don't have the answer to the why question, so we'll just go back, we'll just go right to the how. You can.
That's dangerous. It seems forget the why. We'll just do the how.
Yeah, I'm feeling nonchalant
he's
today.
He's tired. So, he's so
whatever.
Tired.
if you're at the point where you're trying to screw with the ISO file, you know, I'm hoping that you got a really good reason for it.
Yeah.
And you know what? The information is freely available. If you go and do this and you screw up your system, too damn bad.
Yeah, we'll have a show. In 2 weeks, so.
Right. So TechNet article, DD744355, how to remove and remove drivers offline using DISM. So what you want to do is...
I said DISM, and now you're saying DISM.
Yeah, we actually sound out the acronym on so many different things. Like, it's not a WIM, it's a WIM.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I like to pronounce all of the acronyms.
So yeah.
TPM is a TIPM.
Yeah.
No,
nice.
Not really. It's a TPM.
Yeah.
anyways, you crack open the ISO file, you grab the install WIM, you mount it, and it goes through how to remove the drivers that you're looking for. You need to know which inf that they live in.
Yeah. INF.
Inf. Yes.
Yeah.
I will say inf, you know, till the day I die.
Yeah.
But this is exactly how you do it. You have to use DISM in order to add or remove the drivers from the WIM. Then you save the WIM, and then you'll be able to install with that.
Okay, cool. All right, there you have it. Good luck. All right, next question. I have a bootable VHD that I use on my laptop. I recently bought a desktop and would like to use a VHD on... I hear you sighing over there. I would like to use
it's a VHD. Yeah. That one's really hard. This is a vid?
Yeah.
Vid?
Yeah. I'd like to use the VHD on my desktop now rather on the laptop. I copied the VHD to my desktop's hard drive and created the BCD entry. When I boot my computer and select to boot from the VHD, I see Windows 7 spinning bubbles, which is immediately followed by a blue screen and the computer restarting. Should it generally be possible to use the VHD copied from my laptop, and are there restrictions that would prevent this?
Generally speaking, the problem that you've done is that it is a VHD, but now it's just like any other Windows installation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just take, you know, the laptop drive, for example, if you weren't using a VHD, and pop it into your desktop and just have it boot.
Yeah.
What you can do is sysprep that particular VHD.
And explain what sysprep is for someone who may have never done it before.
So sysprepping the machine basically takes it from a specialized installation for the particular hardware components in your system.
It's got all the drivers for the motherboard, all the components
exactly.
on the computer, and it's looking for that when it starts.
Exactly. So sysprep will generalize the machine and say, okay, I need to be prepared to load on any hardware. And that's what that preparation does, is it allows you to move that installation to a different machine. Now, you may have activation issues depending on what machine you're going from. And what type of license that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using, say, an enterprise volume license key, back to a licensing server in your enterprise, you should not have an issue. If you have an OEM type system, then you will have an issue with the activation. So I would recommend not doing moving the VHD to a desktop, you know, just do a clean install. But you may have some luck with the specialization, or, you know, go through the specialization. If you have another key, then you can activate no problem. Or if it's going from a dead machine, you know, your laptop has, you know, kicked the bucket, and you're saying, okay, now it's just upgrading, right? You're swapping out machines. You'll have the activation issue. Phone the number, and then just explain it to them, and they'll say, okay, fine. You know, they'll reactivate it on the desktop. You know, so you have a lot of different options, but you have to go through that sys prep phase.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next question. I want to have a certain speed for my mouse, but it's too fast for my trackpad. How can I have a different mouse pointer speed for each one?
So there is this tool called Auto Sensitivity off of CodePlex. CodePlex is really cool. It's kind of like the code project. You can just have various samples, various apps, just shared for everybody, gives a source code. This will allow you to auto set it based on whichever one that you're using. And this is, you know, free for use. Mm-hmm. Works on XP Vista, Win 7. I don't think it should have any problems with Win 8. Haven't tried it, of course.
Yeah.
But works pretty well.
Nice. And another thing that's up on CodePlex too is a Windows Phone game called ScriptTD. Try it.
ScriptTD.
ScriptTD. That was the Windows Phone app that we came up with that would let anyone who doesn't program create a tower defense game for Windows Phone easily. So yeah, it's very. If you can edit a little bit of XML, if you're familiar with HTML in
From
Photoshop,
or
yeah, then you can make a tower defense game. So another cool CodePlex project that you can play with. But there you go. So that's the answer to that question. And next is pick of the week time. And the pick of the week this week.
This is pure Larry's pick, man.
This is.
But so, I have to admit, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with Wacom, you might know that they make a little tablet that sits by your desk that lets you write with a pen, which is nice. I've used them since
day one.
Yeah. I mean, I used a roller mouse with a wire coming off of it before I used that. Went right to Wacom as soon as possible. And then they started making ones that had a screen on it, so you could actually see what you were doing on the screen underneath the tip of the stylus. That's kind of cool, too.
But that was connected to your desktop.
But it was connected to your desktop.
Your
it's plugged
or
in.
Right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's USB, plug into the wall, don't walk around with it. They are making a real tablet now. So this looks
tablet
pretty...
Tablet for artists.
Tablet for artists. I mean, it's for anybody. They're not going to stop you from getting it,
sure,
if you
want
to crunch numbers. But this thing's beautiful, so it's really nice. Has what looks to me like the finest pen I've ever seen on a tablet. Runs Windows 8, beautiful, and it's multi-touch, of course. Over 2,000 levels of pressure, that's good. That's pretty typical for a Wacom. So it looks like a really, really nice experience. Now, the really cool thing with this being for artists is it means that they're going to be using, like, Photoshop, CAD CAM, stuff like that. So here are the specs. Look at this.
13.3-inch, full HD, 1080.
Yeah.
With a Core i7, 256 gig SSD.
Or 512.
Or 512, but it doesn't look like the 512 is SSD.
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, looks like a heck of a machine. I mean, i7 would be nice on a tablet. And you were talking about you like tablets to have i5 processors in them, right?
For the battery life.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, an i7, I just worry about the heat generation for one. I mean, and if you're using it on battery power, really, what kind of battery life are you getting from it?
Yeah.
So, you know, if it didn't come in an i7 or an i5 form factor, all I'd do is I'd take this and clock it down.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's true. You could do that.
To get the extra battery life.
Yeah.
So that's my main concern with anything that's portable is, what is this battery life?
Yeah. I don't really care that much about battery life because I plug in quite a bit. I'm never like away from a plug that much.
Right.
And I don't mind carrying an AC adapter around with me. So I'm a little bit more lenient on that. And I like a powerful machine because I'm doing, like, you know, Premiere, Photoshop, stuff like that. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this. I'd love to try one out and see what it's like. And
full IPS screen.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It is very, very nice.
Very nice. So if you've tried one out, let us know in the show notes. I would love to try it. We have a viewer from Wacom, don't we? He writes us every once in a while.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the show for this week. If you want to contact us, send us an email at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave us comments in the show notes, but we want to hear from you. We like the email. Send a postcard, too.
Yeah, and you know what? If any of you folks have some interesting picks,
yeah,
you know, that would actually be kind of cool. Like, what have you found in the dark, deep corners of the internet that...
excites you? What do you like? What
that we can actually put on the show.
Yeah, so that I would have to ask Go for picks of the week. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, share it out there. Let's see what people can come up with.
Yeah, I'd like to see your picks of the week. All right, that's the show for this week. See you next week.
Take care.